the beginning of Noah. God sees the world is corrupt. People are serving idolatry, and there are sexually corrupt, and they're stealing from each other, and they're murdering each other. Terrible world. So God's going to destroy the world. Okay. Not only is he going to destroy human beings, destroy the animals and the plants and even the topsoil, the Gemara says. What did they do? The animals don't have free choice, right? And if the animals sinned, right, because they crossbred, that's not their fault. They didn't do any sin. God didn't command the animals to be corrupt. So punishing the animals? And even if you'll say, okay, maybe animals do have free choice, but plants, it's topsoil, why did it have to be destroyed? Secondly, if there's a reason why it had to be destroyed, right, then later on God said, I'm making a promise, and the rainbow is the sign of the promise, there will never be another flood. What kind of promise is that? If the world will reach that level of corruption that necessitated the first flood, then why won't there be a second flood? And if God can forego it and overlook it, then why didn't he overlook it the first time? And if the world will never reach that level, then why does he have to make a shvuah? Why does he make a thing? If it won't reach that level, why should I destroy the world? What's this shvuah? How does it help? And if God could make such a shvuah not to destroy the world twice, why couldn't he make the shvuah not do it the first time? Secondly, why did God have to destroy the world with a flood? Later on, when he wanted to destroy Sodom, he did it with fire. Why didn't God rain down fire on them and destroy the world? Why a flood? And why was it necessary for Noah to be in a teva, right, on the flood waters? Why didn't he take him to the moon? Why didn't he, I don't know, he could give other ways of saving him than forcing him to be in this boat for a year? In order to answer it, basically, also in a nutshell, the idea is the following. And this, some of the commentaries say, I'm just going to give it over to you in my perspective. And that's the following. God created man originally to have a tremendous effect on creation. The whole world was created for the sake of man, and everything serves man, and through man, through human beings, serve God. They don't serve God directly. Everything was created to serve man, and man utilizes them and elevates them in service of God. So the whole world are tools for human beings to use in service of God. In order to do that, man had to have a tremendous influence on the world. What we do elevates the world, affects the world. But zele umaze, everything has the same potential for good as for bad. Otherwise it wouldn't be free choice. As much as man is supposed to elevate the world and influence the world and raise the world towards God, he can also corrupt the world and pollute the world, just like he can physically. He can do it spiritually too, and corrupt the natural things around him, the animal world, the plant world, and so on. Because man had this tremendous influence, and God meant it for the good, that we should influence the world and affect it and elevate it, but because we have free choice, we could have the same power for the bad. Man chose to corrupt himself, and in that way corrupted the world around him too. We find similar things even today. Once heard that the pigeons around San Francisco have a greater predominance of homosexuality than anywhere else in the world. You can understand that maybe that comes from people who have an effect on the environment. Just like human beings can pollute physically, they can pollute things spiritually too. So, but then it was much more intense. And therefore, the Rabbanu Shalom gave human beings free choice, and he gave them the power to influence all of creation, and they chose, instead of influencing it in a positive way, influencing it in a negative way. And therefore they corrupted the world. the whole world became tame, became defiled because of the actions of human beings. Even the ground, even the earth became polluted. What do you do to take away tumah when there's something corrupted? The animals weren't punished. Surely not the ground wasn't punished. The plants weren't punished. They didn't do anything wrong. But they were corrupted. They were polluted. So how do you take away spiritual pollution? A mikveh. You immerse the things in a mikveh. That's what God did. He took the world and immersed it in a mikveh called the flood. And that's why he had to purify the world. And he saved those animals that were not corrupted and not polluted, and those plants that were not corrupted and polluted, right? That remained pure. And the rest of them he destroyed and purified the world by immersing it in a mikveh. And that's why the Mabul took how many days? 40 days and 40 nights of rain. How many measures of water in a mikveh? 40. Same kind of thing. The mikveh. The world needed not to be punished. People were punished. But the world needed to be purified. And the way to purify it was putting it into a mikveh. Okay, so that explains why the world had to be destroyed and the way that it was, and why even the animals and the topsoil or whatever. But why did God then say it could never happen again? What happened after the flood is, before the flood, and this is a conglomeration of many different commentaries from different aspects, but it all points to the following. Before the flood, the world was in an ideal physical way. There were no seasons. The world wasn't tilted on its axis, which means it wasn't crooked. And because of that, around the equator, or in the world, whole world had basically the climate of the equator. And everything was ideal. The climate was ideal, and therefore fruits and vegetables could grow to their ultimum potential, and therefore people didn't need to eat meat. They were able to exist on the nutrients in plants, in fruit, or whatever. After the flood, the world was tilted on its axis. It became crooked. And God limited the world. Now there were seasons. Now there was what's it called? The influence that man would have on the world was diminished. God said, you used it for the wrong, I'm going to diminish it. Now you can't use it for the good anymore as intensely. But you can't use it for the bad anymore. What man will do will affect him, but minimally affect the environment. And therefore, there'll never come a point where I'm going to have to destroy the world. I'll punish people, but not destroy the world, because man's influence in corrupting the world and defiling it and polluting it is going to be diminished. That was the shvuah. The things are going to change. No longer does man have that tremendous power over creation. Therefore, you can understand a few things. Another reason why after the flood they were able to eat meat. Because how does man elevate the world? One way is by conquering it, by using it, but another way is by eating. How so? The minerals go into the plants and are elevated one step up. Mineral life is on a lower level, and plant life is on a higher. It's a living being, a living organism. So the minerals supply the food for the plants, and they are elevated to a higher level in that way. The plants are eaten by animals, and they're elevated. They become part and parcel of the animal, elevated one step up from plant to animal. Animals are eaten by human beings and integrated within a human being and elevate them in that way. And human beings serve God, and through their service to God, use the entire world that's included in them, the mineral, the plant, and the animal, in service of God. Before the flood, man's influence over animals was so strong, they didn't have to eat them. He was able to influence them from the outside. In how he acted, elevated the animal. When Mashiach comes, it says the animals also be elevated. They'll have a seichel. Animals will become intelligent. And they'll be influenced by human beings. But until then, man's influence over the animals was diminished. and he can't elevate them anymore from the outside so much, because he can't corrupt them from the outside either so much. So therefore it was necessary, in order to elevate the animals to a higher level, to eat them, which wasn't necessary before. What's the sign of this, that God's, that man's influence over the world is going to be diminished? The rainbow. Why? There are many explanations of why the rainbow represents that there won't be another flood. One is that you can't have a rainbow if the cloud cover is very, very thick. The only rainbow comes when the sunlight goes through the clouds, right, and goes through the water vapor and creates a rainbow. But if the clouds are very, very dense and the sunlight can't come through, then there can't be a rainbow. So every time there's a rainbow is a sign that the cloud cover isn't so intense. And there won't be a flood. That's one idea. Another idea is a rainbow is like a bow and arrow. Except, which way is it going? If you put an arrow on that bow, it'd shoot up, not down. It goes like this. So it's a sign that the bow is cut, but it's not facing the earth, it's facing up. Also, there's no string on the bow, so it's very much harmless. And there's no arrows. So it's a bow facing the wrong way, without a string, without arrows. It's a sign that even if the world deserves to be destroyed, God's not going to destroy it. Another idea of the the two ideas of the rainbow. But according to what I'm saying, the rainbow signifies something else. What is a rainbow? It's a diffraction of light into its components, into its various wavelengths. Okay, red till the ultraviolet. Before the flood, God's influence in the world was very strong, and therefore man's influence, who received that strong influence, filtered down in a very strong way. God said, after the flood, I'm going to diminish and limit your influence. How am I going to do that? By having my influence not come down as strong. And therefore it's not going to be that strong white light that includes all of the wavelengths, but I'm going to diffuse it into separate things. And each one will be a separate thing, not as intense. And that's the influence that's going to come from above, diffused, not intense. And therefore your influence is going to be diffused and not intense. That's a symbol of the rainbow. That God's influence on man is going to be diminished, and therefore man's influence on the world is diminished. So there'll never come another time where it's necessary to destroy the world, only to destroy the people who are sinning. But their effect on the world will never be that strong. Time for one thing else. One more thing. The Migdal Bavel, right? The Tower of Bavel. What do they want to do? It says they wanted to fight with God. They were foolish people to think they could go fight with God, to build the tower up into the heavens. Where did they think God was? What did they think he was? So many of the Mefarshim explained it in the following way. It's interesting, if you look at what they said they wanted to do, they said like this. They got together and they said, let's make bricks. Let's make bricks. And then they said, after they made the bricks, hey, let's make a city and a tower out of the bricks. That's not the way things work. People first have a goal. Let's make a city. Okay, now we need bricks. So first you have a goal, and then you decide what materials you have to reach that goal. You don't first decide to make materials and say, well, we got all these bricks, what are we going to do with them? Let's build a city. It doesn't work like that. But the idea is, the Rebbe Lishom created a natural resource world, raw materials. He expects us to develop those raw materials and to perfect the world and perfect ourselves, and that's the purpose of a human being, and to create a world to come by perfecting this world in both physically and spiritually. So that's what it says, Asher bara Elokim la'asos. God created the world in an unfinished, imperfect way and expects us to finish it off. God created in order that man should finish it off, which is brought out with a medrash we've mentioned many times here. Turnus Rufus HaRosha asked Rabbi Akiva, what's better, what God makes or what people make? So he expected Rabbi Akiva to say, what God makes is better than what people make. And then Tunis Rufus would say, in that case, we Goyim are better than you Jews, because we're the way God made us and you're the way a mole made you. Rabbi Akiva surprised him and he said, what people make is for sure better than what God makes. So Tunis Rufus said, what are you talking about? He said, simply, you're going home to eat lunch. God made wheat, your wife made bread and cake. Which is better? The bread and the cake is better than the wheat. So obviously what people make is better than what God makes. Meaning, God created an unfinished, imperfect, raw material world. He expects us to take that and develop it. So what we do is better, because that's the way it's supposed to be. However, people are supposed to function within a framework and not think that they created and control the world. But they're working within the framework that God gave them. In that respect, people's development of the world, perfection of the world, is ideal. But if people think that they're not working within a framework that God gave, but they're creating the framework, they're the creators of the world. And that's what the people who built this tower wanted to do. They wanted to sever their connection to God and say, we're going to do it on our own. We don't need God. And therefore, they said, what do we need God for? Only for rain? We'll make it rain. We'll go up there and work with science or whatever and seed the clouds. We'll make it rain. We don't need God's help. And that's what they said. We don't want... Till then, they built with stones. That's natural. Bricks are artificial. You make bricks. They're human-made. That's what they said. We want the bricks to take the place of the stones. Look in the Psukim. That's what it says. We don't want to build with God's building blocks. We want to make our own. And not to develop what God gave, but to go in competition with Him. And we'll build a... Some say that they wanted to build the Rabbi Yonason Apshitz, who lived in the 1700s, end of the 1600s. He said they were building a rocket launching station to conquer the heavens and to control nature. That's what they wanted to do. They wanted to control nature. I once saw a statement made by a doctor, this was about 40 years ago, before they discovered some diseases. He said that given enough money and time, with the emphasis on the money, there is no disease that modern medicine can't conquer. Not even no diseases that existed. A stupid statement. But the man is all powerful. It's not all powerful. Right? We're limited. Right? We can do what we can do, but the Rabbanim still controls the world. They're having a hard time with Ebola now. Right? A hard time with AIDS. So money, plenty of money, and plenty of time has passed by and still haven't conquered it. So a person has to develop the world and he has to make technology, but he has to realize that he's doing it within the framework that the Rabbanu Shalom gave, not going in competition with God. And that was the sin of the Migdal Bavel. And therefore, what is the representation of man's superiority over other all nature? His speech. And that's what enables him to, with his neshama, which is represented by speech, to develop the world. And they use their speech, they desecrated the la'asos, the development of the world, which is supposed to be what man's supposed to do. They desecrated it because they weren't developing God's world. They're going in competition with God, and therefore the Rabbanim Shalom scattered them. And mainly by speech, because speech is what represents the divinity of human beings. The neshama, God took their speech, made it into other languages. They couldn't get together anymore. So that was the idea of desecrating technology. Technology is a tremendous thing. People are supposed to develop the world. And they're supposed to develop technology. They're supposed to use it in service of God and recognize that they're using God's framework, which He wants us to develop. But if you think you're going in competition with God and you're developing technology to go against what the Rabbanu Shalom wants and to bring to the world destruction, which brings us back to the original thing, right, of defiling the world and polluting the world through technology, then you're defeating the whole purpose. And that is the sin of the flood and the Migdal Bavel somehow put together. That's what we have today with all of these great technology, but that can be used for the good. Right? All this technology, you can have websites of Torah and unbelievable amounts of Torah information that's put over the internet. On the other hand, there are a lot more websites of pornography and tuma, right? That if you look at technology not as developing God's world, but going in competition with God, then it pollutes the world and leads to what led to the first Mabul also.